Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. It's Halloween. Thought we'd talk about something a little spooky today. Actually, it's something that has a lot of people worried and some people scared and some people are very wrapped up about this. But Austin wrote a column this week on Point about the need for, I can't remember Austin's exact phrasing.
I call it trustworthy spies.
Yeah, I was going to say honest spies.
Well, that's all right. Honest spies is fine, and it's not an oxymoron. You know, an oxymoron is something that sounds like it, you know, it couldn't exist, you know, like honest banker. No, the honest bankers exist, but that's it's not an oxymoron. So,
right. So, Austin, set the framework for us. We've got the biggest thing that people are worried about right now are the NSA. And maybe you could tell a lot of people probably until right now have never heard about the NSA until this blew up because, you know, we knew about the other three-letter organizations, the CIA, the FBI, et cetera. But the NSA, unless you were working in the intelligence field or in intelligence areas, you may not have heard them. I know where I went to school, they recruited heavily because of our language expertise at Brigham Young University. Mm-hmm. NSA recruited heavily from there, but most people have never heard about the NSA. Who are they, and what do they do?
National Security Agency is the America's electronic spy bureau. Grows out of the old Army Security Agency, ASA. It is electronic intercept, huge role in World War II. But all the services still retain electronic intercept capability. One of the most famous examples about it is our ability to read certain Japanese codes and how that informed the Battle of Midway, how it informed a number of things we did. But the NSA, it was a consolidation of the electronic intercept and decryption. In a similar way that CIA was an attempt at civilianization of the covert and human intelligence and some of the other components that were in the Office of Strategic Services during World War II. So, as soon as someone first tried to use signal flags or wave a torch, somebody was in the enemy message interception business. NSA consolidates, attempts, I shouldn't say consolidates, but NSA produces, how to describe this, thousands of reports every day based on, well, it depends on how you want to count it, millions, billions of intercepts. Now, what's got them in trouble, oh, by the way, you said you want me to frame it. I guess I should have started off with Pearl Harbor and 9/11. That's a good way to frame it for Americans because those are devastating surprise attacks, and they were not stopped by our intelligence agencies, but as the spies will tell you, we can't talk about what we succeed at. And I have never had an intelligence billet. I'm not an intelligence officer. That said, I have worked closely as an operations and plans guy. You live off of what intelligence produces. You also have the responsibility sometimes of going to Intel and saying, not only does this not make sense, here's what I need for you to find out. They can't always do it because, Dan, assessing intelligence and interpreting it are very, very difficult. A quick sidebar on this. I had a friend who was a retired CIA agent. He was teaching at Harvard after he had retired, and he gave a short talk to a small group of us after a Army War College national level game where he talked about the difficulties of obtaining intelligence. When I say it was short, it was about 30 minutes and filled with his own personal examples of attempts to acquire and then assess specific types of intelligence. So NSA, though, in our digital world, and here we are conversing over the Internet, recording this, and most of our listeners, if not all of them, are going to be listening to this on a podcast on the Internet. When it's all moving around in electrons, this is another place for NSA to acquire intelligence. And the porosity of the digital world as it is that there is no clean division between foreign operations, and I should have said NSA is dedicated to quote-unquote foreign intercept, as versus domestic intercept. Now, as Jim will talk about in a moment, I hope, we have legal requirements. There are legal barriers separating NSA from domestic surveillance and violation of the Bill of Rights, U.S. Constitution, surveilling innocent American citizens. And NSA actually had come under criticism in the past, Dan, by some civil liberties groups, also some congressmen have expressed concerns about NSA surveillance. My guess that the CIA's SWIFT operation, which was busted by the New York Times, and they got a Pulitzer Prize for it. It was a completely legal intelligence operation, though, which is the one that monitored terrorist finances going through the banks. And by the way, it succeeded in getting Hambali, who was the head of Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Southeast Asia, and the fellow who put together the 2002 Bali terrorist massacre. SWIFT produced intelligence that succeeded in getting him arrested in Thailand, I believe it was. I believe that NSA must have had a role in that because it had elements of tracking. Jim can comment on this, but it's because they've got the capabilities, they've got the computers, they've got the kind of personnel that you were describing, polylingual, and they're also bite heads as well. So the issue that emerges this past summer when Edward Snowden defected is that one of NSA's, and Jim actually has written some and explained some very very clearly about how this works. I believe it was the PRISM operation, which you can look at some of Snowden's PowerPoint slides on the web. PRISM used metadata analysis techniques to track emails, among other, and phone calls. Now, just so you understand how the law works, it is legal for the Post Office Department to know who sent a package and where it's going. That's the outside of the envelope. That is the equivalent of metadata analysis, knowing that Dan called Austin on the phone at 2:03 p.m. on July 17th, and it was a digital phone call. That's the thing, at least it came from a number associated with Dan Masterson, and to a number associated with Austin Bay, and it took place at a time. That would be the quote-unquote metadata analysis. And the way that you're looking for certain kinds of patterns that would indicate that someone is having contacts with a phone number in Chechnya in Russia, or a phone number in an embassy in Tanzania that happens to be the Iranian embassy or the like. Those kind of things begin to build a picture so you can look back, and I'm talking about a phone call from the United States to one of these foreign phone numbers, indicate that somebody may not be talking to his aunt. He may not be talking to his mother. He could be talking to someone who's helping him put together a terrorist attack in the United States. Now, this comes into the legal requirements for, quote-unquote, I think the term they use is look back to phone numbers and email for generated in the United States. Now, the next element that puts NSA in the headlines is the revelation of the last 3 or 4 weeks of the spying on foreign leaders, including allies. Angela Merkel's cell phone apparently was attacked by NSA in 2002 or 2003. This goes to, well, the fact is the dirty business of spying, allies spy on one another. Now, the quality of allied spying is not always with the same type of intensity or animosity with an opponent or with an enemy. Now, Jim is going to laugh in a minute and say, oh, ha-ha, Austin, you tell that to the French, because the French have a reputation for just being aggressive as they can possibly be in obtaining all kinds of intelligence, to include economic intelligence, from their allies. Some of this goes back down to the tradition of what an ambassador is. An ambassador is, of course, a national or personal representative of a state or of the king, of the city-state or whatever, but he's also a political intelligence asset and an economic intelligence asset. And everybody who's been in the diplomatic business knows that the business of every diplomat, even the lowest consular official, is political intelligence. You're reporting back. Of course you are. That's what you do. So it's an intelligence operation. Defense attachés, you know, a military officer assigned to the embassy, yes, you're a liaison with a foreign power, with a foreign, with an ally and the like, but you are also providing information on what you see in the country to which you're assigned, and that is a military officer assigned to the State Department to serve as a defense attaché. Frequently, when it's an Army or Navy officer, it's somebody who's got an intelligence background ends up in the defense attaché role. Not always, but it's frequently the case because it is intelligence gathering. This is the reason that friendly nations, allies, other democracies keep tabs on foreign diplomats. There are two reasons for it. One is, of course, well, what are they looking at? We need to know that, and it feeds into counterintelligence. But the second one is also in the case of the U.S. and many of our allies, it's also to ensure their security. You can say ha ha to that, but no, you don't want an incident with a senior diplomat or a consular official harmed because of some terrorist group or political opponent decides to carry out an action against that said diplomat or consular official in the United States. So this goes on. When I've painted here down a lot of gradations. Now, NSA performs, in my opinion, an absolutely vital security function. We're constantly at war in the electronic world, and there's all elements of conflict and threat with the information that's passed in the electronic war and in the electronic world. And NSA is a key soldier, if not the key essential soldier in that war fighting capacity. My concern is that NSA is definitely NSA needs to step up and say we are following the legal guidelines, meeting the requirements of the Constitution, and because our job is we are part of the American defense establishment. Unfortunately, there's a great deal of trust that has been lost by the American public. You can see that in polls, but you can also see that even in various interesting broad spectrum from both libertarians on the so-called libertarian right and far-left, quote-unquote, civil libertarians. They're both libertarians, seeing that NSA is snooping and diminishing the privacy or destroying privacy and the like. But you've also got the issue, and this is where you the politically correct just go bananas, of the administration. If you want to talk about how bad Nixon was in using Internal Revenue Service to try to attack his political opponents or get leverage or dirt or whatever, you've got to look at the ongoing IRS scandal, which is an abuse of personal information, and it's illegal. We already know that some illegalities occurred because the congressional investigations turned up redacted documents that I think the number they put on it is 1603, meaning illegal information, personal information was illegally given and exposed. And the thoughts here are the administration does not know what belongs to it, quote unquote, in its executive powers and the president's power as commander in chief, and what does not. And NSA is caught in a bind here. It's caught in a political bind with its current bosses. It's also caught in a bind of public perception. And like a lot of spies, they don't have the ability to step out and say, "Here's what we really do," because they live in a tight-lipped world. We are getting indications that many NSA employees, thousands of them, are extremely dismayed at what they see as a failure to back them up. There was an excellent article that ran, say we're doing this on Halloween, I think it ran on the 29th in the Los Angeles Times. There have been a couple of other ones showing up. I managed to graze part of that LA Times article about an hour before I filed my column. I'd already written a great deal of it and already read a couple of wire service reports about disgruntled NSA employees, but there's more that's come out really in the last 2 days. That is a way for them to express their disenchantment and dismay because they happen to be American citizens too. So I'll end it there, and I want to hear what Jim has to say about the legal aspects because I know he knows a lot about it.
Jim?
The problem with espionage is that in times of national emergency, like after 9/11, the powers that be, we're talking about Congress, President, etc., turn to the intelligence agencies and say, not, you know, how did you screw up? You know, that was sort of glossed over, but save us. Do whatever you can. Now, since the 1970s, we had the Church Commission, which basically forbade the CIA from doing all the stuff that had worked in the past because some of it was embarrassing. You know, like hiring informants in foreign countries who basically have blood on their hands. Now, of course, police departments all over the United States do this all the time, and nobody complains. You know, confidential informants or mafia hitmen are often, you know, coerced or persuaded, whatever, to inform on their fellow criminals, and that's considered perfectly, good practice. But in the 1970s, the CIA got dragged over the coals for doing the same thing internationally, and basically a lot of restrictions were put on them. Then, of course, along comes any kind of emergency, and the same politicians, often the same, literally the same politicians, turn and say, "What can you do to fix this?" And when it's pointed out that, yes, we can find out information we need in order to prevent another attack, but it will basically break some of the restrictions you put on this, they are told, "Oh, don't worry about it." Now, we're going through another cycle where, as Austin pointed out, the people in the NSA who undoubtedly, I mean, from what I've been told through the back door, they definitely told and they even brought in their own lawyers, you know, that if we do this, this is a violation. Now, nobody wrote anything down, at least not nothing anybody's, you know, gone public with yet, because everybody knew what they were doing. I mean, all these people understood that they were playing a game, a political game. It was a life and death situation, but they basically had to work around the problems they had created themselves, you know, in an earlier time. So the NSA went out and they basically did what had to be done. There's been no other 9/11 attacks. There's been plenty of efforts. Now the, you know, security agencies are being accused of setting terrorists up which is absurd when you look at some of the cases that are being prosecuted, because these are guys who, given half a chance, they would have killed Americans. But, you know, that's politics and the way the media works. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt always, you know, sells newspapers or, you know, attracts eyeballs. You can sell to advertisers. The basic problem is that you do have a media political coalition that is always looking for people to blame. And the intelligence agencies, who, as Austin pointed out, cannot boast of their successes, but of course their failures, that's fair game. This basically bites you in the rear end eventually, because you come up against a situation where you need these forbidden services, and you either have to authorize them or basically get blamed for an even bigger disaster down the road if there's another attack. So this is a form of theater which is unique to the Western democracies. It's even worse in Europe, well, in some parts of Europe. For example, in Germany, they're very sensitive about what the Nazis did during World War II. Now, what did the Nazis do? Well, basically, they passed laws which allowed the Gestapo to do most of what they did. It's a little murky on whether or not they actually passed the law to authorize, you know, mass murder, although in some cases they did, but that's a whole other issue. But the fact of the matter is the Germans are, how should I put it, extremely sensitive about any kind of, you know, extremely effective intelligence group. By extremely effective, they mean something that basically looks too closely at what ordinary people do in their ordinary, you know, course of events. They're extremely sensitive. But just across the water in Britain, and they won the war, which they never quit to this day reminding the Germans of, they are much less upset about things like NSA. What exactly is going on here? Now, you can blame that. Well, actually, literally, it is national differences. The British never had anything like, at least not in the last few centuries, like the Nazis, like the secret police. The modern secret police and police state was actually invented in the 19th century by France. This is one of Napoleon's accomplishments. Now, this doesn't get too much publicity, but there's a public record of it. You can, again, look it up on the internet. But there are even many, many books written about it. Napoleon had a very efficient secret police. He was all aware of media control and media manipulation. And that was one reason why he stayed in power for so long in such a chaotic period of European history. The British, on the other hand, they basically, you know, had this attitude, get on with it. Do what you have to do. As we pointed out in the strategy page, the British openly passed laws giving MI6, you know, the James Bond, the license to kill guys, immunity from prosecution. If they are ordered to do something in the name of the crown, you know, to protect, you know, the British people, then do what you have to do. And don't worry about some politician coming after you later looking to prosecute you. Now, that's the tremendous thing for morale of these agents who are risking their lives. There are all sorts of, you know, nasty operations. Some of them are, in retrospect, for example, you know, of questionable morality. For example, in the 80s, I think it was, the Gulf states, Oman in particular, was having trouble with rebels and, well, basically people trying to overthrow the government. Some of them were Islamic radicals, but a lot of them were just, you know, tribes that didn't agree with the people in charge. And they asked the British, who had always had business interests in the Persian Gulf, to help them out. And Britain said, okay. And they sent in MI6 and, you know, various other organizations, and they said, do what you have to do. And they did. But when you read about it, basically they killed people, without, you know, much, you know, attention to legalities. But of course the problem in Oman was there weren't many legalities to pay attention to. In other words, they did what they had to do in the circumstances they found themselves in. This is not accepted in the United States. It's as simple as that. But as people on the NSA will tell you, when they, those people who are eventually allowed to talk legally, they know that they will again and again be called upon to do whatever they can to find out, you know, who's trying to kill Americans and when. And as, again, as people in the NSA will point out to you, that all the tools they use, a lot of them are available to any commercial organization. Again, as Austin pointed out, there are corporations, but the post office can legally, you know, compile metadata that the NSA is being pilloried now for collecting. There's a lot of potential out there to track what individuals do. And most individuals, it's interesting, for all the sturm und drang the media and many politicians have generated over this issue, when they get opinion polls, people generally will say, well, yeah, you know, you do what you got to do. In other words, you know, the American public is more British, as it were, while the American, you know, media and, you know, politicians are more, exploitative, shall we say. In other words, the people in general understand that you do what you got to do. I mean, if anybody abuses the data collected, then and they will be, they are exposed to public, you know, wrath. You know, the people will get extremely angry. That's what's happening now. A classic example is what happened with our current government and their exploitation of the IRS to go after political opponents. Now, this is strictly illegal. But the media, which is, you know, very pro-Obama, there's no secret about that, they will not touch that issue. I mean, it got visibility for a while, but it's been generally, you know, out of sight and out of mind. But because of the internet, it's the people are still finding out that there's a lot more to it than the mass media is willing to report. Of course, the Democrats understand that if there's a Democratic president elected, there will be new, you know, there will be retribution, as it were. I mean, but the basic problem is we have plenty of laws. We just don't enforce them. Another problem, again, especially with the government agencies, not so much the NSA, because these technical agencies tend to attract people who are at least skilled at technical areas and not as stupid as many other agencies, which can put any political hack in charge and hope for the best. But the government in general cannot get the quality of personnel for anything that commercial businesses can, because they simply can't pay. There are more restrictions. There's more risk. You know, media is more likely to jump on you. It's a whole different ballgame, and that's something we tend to avoid or ignore, but it's there. I mean, everybody understands that, of course, the government is incompetent. And this combination of opportunism by politicians and the media and the capabilities of intelligence, modern marketing organizations or intelligence agencies, and more, there's not much of a difference except one can kill you and the other can't, is creating this split. But it's mainly an American issue. Again, in Europe, again, with the exception of Germany, but again, even during the war on terror, and they have plenty of Muslims, which they know, there are published reports of this, who are, you know, sympathetic to Islamic terrorists. They still will do what they have to do. And of course, one reason why there isn't more of an uproar overseas about the accusation against NASA and their intelligence collection, it's because many of these same countries, when they consult with the leaders, political leaders, consult with their own intelligence people, the intelligence, well, yes, we've had access to that data. It's great stuff. So you're seeing this, the Europeans critics are backing off. Whoops. They were just doing what we asked them to do. You know, secondhand, our allies came to us and said, hey, look, United States, we have a lot more resources. You know, we're going to share all this, right? And we have been sharing for a long time. But again, the people on the very top, they don't know exactly what's being shared. And now they're finding out, and it's a little embarrassing. So they're becoming rather quiet.
Right. The thing that I find interesting, Jim, is actually some of the entities that probably have more data on the American people or people worldwide are probably Google, Yahoo, and some of the other large web entities.
Yes, and that's always been the case. The marketing organizations, some large corporations, but there are purely marketing organizations out there. It's a relatively modern development, although Sears Roebuck developed a lot of the techniques which are still being used in intelligence gathering over a century ago, you know, with their catalog business. But in the last few decades, as computers got cheaper and more powerful and more software, analysis software was developed, again, commercially, not by the government. The NSA and CIA found themselves playing catch-up. They had people, again, it was like the reservists, these Mormon guys they recruited out of Brigham Young because they spoke foreign languages and they were probably more trustworthy, got mobilized for the war on terror, and they informed their career intelligence compatriots, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I use in my business that we could use here. And that was a big revelation. I was in a couple of times on my trips down to, CIA has me in occasionally to lecture their analysts. And I pointed some of this stuff out. And after I was over, the first time was, a few years after 9/11, and I got pulled aside by a number of senior people saying, what is that? What is this? What is this? I mean, this is stuff that, again, somebody in the CIA knew about, but it hadn't yet percolated up to the senior people, or they didn't understand what it was really capable of. So this is why human and non-secret information has become more of a tool. They found out in many cases they can find out more from unclassified data commercially available with the tools the commercial marketing organizations use. They can find out stuff they couldn't find out with all their classified tools. So this has been a big change, again, in the last couple of decades by technology. And, of course, as usual, the politicians haven't really caught up with them. Yeah.
Right.
Hey, one of the things, Jim, I want you to talk about, though, was FISA and some of the legal elements that the intelligence community especially electronic intercept elements have to deal with. We do have legal requirements, and I know you have written about it.
Yes, but the problem is, and again, the government and the media tend to forget about this, is it's not a matter of we didn't have laws for something, we didn't enforce the laws we have. For example, on Wall Street, something I'm more familiar with, the whole business of, in 2008, you know, the meltdown, there was not a problem with insufficient laws to prevent what happened. The problem, which again, the politicians, for obvious reasons, don't want to, you know, answer or even address, is that the existing laws were not enforced. Another hot potato, which no politician wants to address, is the fact that the SEC, in the last few decades, it has become much more politicized. In other words, people on Wall Street, who of course don't want to be regulated, they don't want a bunch of, you know, they don't want the law, they don't want the laws enforced. That's why I call so many of my associates down here that are currently unindicted. Wall Street is an industry where you get away with what you can. I mean, that's the basic rule. As I was told, you know, 20 years ago when I first started working down there, he says, the way to make money on Wall Street is to figure out a new angle and work the hell out of it before it's outlawed. And that's one of the basic rules people play by down there. But the politicians have been bought. It's corruption. You would look at the people running the SEC for the last, you know, 20 years. By and large, they're ineffective. And that's the way the people on Wall Street like it. And they pay for that. And they get what they pay for. End of story.
And you have just heard the voice of real-world cynicism, Dan.
Yeah. Well,
cynicism is often described as truth some people don't want to hear.
Yeah.
A truth some people don't hear.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch it all play out, and there's arguments on both sides, and I think it comes down to some of it is that, like you said, we haven't enforced the laws that we have, and Congress has failed probably in some of their oversight
Dan,
very much. They were told about that. I mean, the classic example is the Bernie Madoff thing. Several people, over a decade before, you know, he finally fessed up, came to the SEC, or went to the government, and said, look, I have proof. Do you guys have any clue what this clown is doing? It's a Ponzi scheme. And there have been several books written, you know, so it's no big secret now. But the SEC didn't understand it. Or they said, well, no, this would be too much of a political mess. This guy's too well connected. You know, I don't want to mess with this. It happened then, it'll happen again. Because the basic ground rules are still in play. If you combine enough influence, if you basically contribute to enough politicians, enough money to enough politicians, they're going to listen to you. And if enough of them are listening to you, they're not going to have to get your interests.
Okay, Jim, how does NSA recover a trust from the American public? Does it need the trust of the American public?
No, it doesn't need the trust of the American public. They're not in the trust business. They're in the getting results business. And basically that's what they're told to do, especially in national emergencies.
Okay.
I mean,
so
for example, before World War II, when some people in the military said, you know, we should put more money into cracking codes because, you know, we've got people who are pretty good at it, they were turned down and said, no, gentlemen don't read other gentlemen's mail. That was the politically correct thing to say back then. Well, once Pearl Harbor happened, that went out the window. But it came back after, you know, VE Day, rejected.
So what's
just the way things work.
All right. So what's the role of leadership in saying, where the leader steps up and says, this is what we want them to do. Have we heard, has the American people heard that from its national leadership? I say it has.
No, because most national leaders, at least the ones in charge, not the opposition party, basically, you know, see which way the wind is blowing and go that way. I mean, that's how you succeed in politics. Now, give Obama some credit. He has basically and protecting the NSA. I mean, he's not a stupid guy. They told him, they have to tell the commander-in-chief, you know, what's going on, how we do it, what the risk and whatnot. They, you know, they're all about risk analysis down in Washington these days. So he knew it, as did his ally. So this is all theater, you know, what you see being played out in the media, because everybody knows what the NSA did. They don't know exactly how they did it, but that's immaterial. They were basically using tools and techniques which are commercially available. They were simply using them on a larger scale, on a worldwide scale. And not to sell people's stuff, but to prevent other people from blowing stuff up. So that's understood, but that's not news. That will not make headlines.
One last question. And Dan, this is a hypothetical. But the thing is, this is where what worries me. And Jim brought up the Church Commission, Frank Church Committee, in the 1970s, and what was done with CIA. I'll say that the so-called reforms initiated by Frank Church harmed U.S. intelligence capabilities. It led to a loss of a lot of highly capable personnel. They were the ones, as Jim said, who had worked the sewers of the world, made deals with Guatemalan thugs and Somali smugglers and the like. Of course they did, and Jim gave the reason for it, and they were kicked out. That hurt us a great deal. I don't want to see that happen with NSA. How do you prevent that? I'm not asking for an answer. I'm not quite sure how to do it.
The way they are trying to prevent it down there is they're pointing out what happened with the Church Committee. I mean, again, the things I have described are no secrets down in D.C. Everybody, not everybody in Congress, you know, gets briefed at the top secret level. You know, there are smaller and smaller committees that everybody that people trust to go look at the top secret stuff and report back in unclassified terms and what have you. But it's generally known how things work and what the risks are. What the NSA is saying, look, let's not go through this silly drill we did in the 1970s. Say whatever you have to say, but if you want to put handcuffs on us, the blood is on your hands. We told you what had to be done. We did it. We protected the country. You know, you guys do whatever you feel you have to do, but if basically you tell us, you know, you shut us down and you're running blind in a bad neighborhood, you know, and it's your fault if something goes wrong, not ours. It's simple as that.
Dan, maybe somebody yes. will listen to Strategy Page and invite Jim to leave Manhattan and come down to Washington to say that before Congress. I would love to hear that said before Congress. And I sound like I'm being cheeky and kidding you, Jim, but I really mean it. You know, I'm concerned about it. So
they don't need me to say it. There are plenty of people down there who have worked in D.C. for a long time who have the knowledge and the ability to say what I just said. Where they will usually find people like that who are willing to get in front of Congress and say it are people who are recently retired.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are plenty of those.
Well, and that's
right.
A lot of them don't care if they're not invited to a lot of certain parties in certain circles anymore. And they will get up to say it.
The anecdotal story I told about the friend of mine teaching at Harvard, he had been retired at the time, I'm going to say 15 years or so. And they are resources. That's where they are able to talk. The information passed by many of them are what I would call metadata. They're not going to give you the specifics, and they darn well shouldn't. But they do give you the envelope of what happened. And when we say it's a dirty business, it's a dirty business, but it's an absolutely necessary business. Maybe that's a good way to end it.
Yeah, I think so. We will talk to both of you next
time. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you. Bye.